Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf, my friends. It's a gorgeous day here in Philadelphia on Saturday, September the 25th. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. As always, I say this because I mean it. It is truly a joy to have you here with us. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I want to introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from the City of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I so thank you for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc. And if you don't see it on the bookstore shelves, just ask the clerk for it because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now let us go and meet our special guest for this Saturday, September the 25th. And she is a book author, a health practitioner, spiritual counselor, and an entrepreneur. She is the author of several books, including Emancipating Your Spirit, Hair Pieces, and We Surrender. She is the one and only, I hope I pronounced her name correctly, Mama Akosa. Help me out if I didn't do
that. Good morning, good morning. It's Akosua Alisa Bree. Akosua.
Okay.
And Akosua is from Ashanti, Ghana. It means Sunday love.
Oh, okay. And thank you so much. And I'm probably still going to do it wrong, but Akosua, she is also
excellent.
I can tell she has a beautiful spirit. She is also a radio talk show host and an organizer and supporter of the Kumba Festival, and we are delighted to have her here with us this morning. So welcome, welcome, Mama Akosua.
Thank you, thank you. I'm just blessed to be here this morning, actually blessed to be alive. And I'm real excited because not only because of my book that's out, but because of the annual International Law Conference that's happening next weekend. So we have a lot going on.
And if there's something you want to mention about that, because in my research I didn't pull that in, just when, you know, you're speaking, just go ahead and insert that into any while we're doing this interview. I know you have been a wellness practitioner for over 40 years.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, was there a, you know, your voice, you sound like you're not a day older than 20.
You know, most people say that.
You
know, most people say that.
Was there a single event that caused you, and it's so interesting, people who go into either as a psychologist or any type of wellness path, a lot of times people themselves had to go through a lot and come out on the other side themselves before they even, and then something said, you know what, I'm just like with Harriet Tubman, I like to go and see if I can help other people come out as well. But was there a single event that happened for you that made you say, you know what, this is what I want to do? What inspired you to get on that path?
Well, actually, from a little tiny person, you know, by the way, I'm in my 60s, so years ago, when our parents bought us little gifts or whatever, they bought two things in relationship to maybe an occupation, and I had a little doctor's kit and had a lot of little dolls, and at one point, I thought of myself being a pediatrician, and unfortunately, when I was in junior high, my counselor, and we have some counselors who still do that today, sort of misdirected me. She told me that I had to have all A's, and I was an A-B student. And my mother,
goodness,
not knowing, said, well, maybe she's correct. Maybe you need to go into nursing. So I went into nursing, and I did that in the 60s, and I thought I was just too revolutionary, too black to go to the European institution. So I traveled around the country helping sisters, and I became a certified childbirth educator and learned how to do things in relationship to herbs and nature. And when I moved to Philly, because I'm originally from Boston, when I moved to Philly, I had the choice of going back to nursing school and I chose that. But what I did was to go into a licensed practical nurse, and I did that for about 10 years, and then I became an RN. I went into nursing school for RN. And while I was doing that, I noticed that most of the energy was on death and illness and not on wellness. Mm. And when most people think of health, they think of insurance, death, and illness. They don't necessarily
yes.
think of wellness.
Yeah.
You know, so right.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in all areas of medicine and nursing, but psychiatric and maternity were the ones that gravitated towards. And mental health sort of led me into hypnotherapy. It led me into neurolinguistic programming. It led me into things that didn't require medications because I saw that the medications had so many side effects, it really put mm-hmm. people on a spiral that went down as opposed to up.
Mm-hmm.
And today yeah. we have a lot of different challenges that call for us to really go within and do some critical thinking, which is where
mm-hmm.
Emancipate Your Spirit came from.
Wow, you know, what an interesting journey. I have another friend who is a nurse, and now she's actually working in Africa to set up clinics to help people, not taking the more of the path of what you're doing, but also the medical practitioner path as well. But that's interesting. When as y'all listening, I thought of this doctor by the name of Adam Patch. I don't know, or Bridget Patch Adams.
Yeah,
the TV
mm-hmm,
show
Patch
based
Adams,
on
right.
him years
mm-hmm.
ago. I was thinking of you as he tried to, you know, make the children happier who were in the hospitals
mm-hmm.
That
right.
were born with cancer, and his supervisors really did not like that. At
right, he
all.
Didn't like the humor.
Baby, uh-huh. Stop all this laughing. Cut this
right.
out now.
Right,
and so. It just made me think when you said that the medical field really focuses on more death and illness and maintaining. Let's help you. You're going to keep the illness. It's almost like there's this agreement. You're going to keep the illness, okay? Now, do you agree to that? Now, we're going to show you how you can keep the illness but maintain so you can do things like go grocery shopping and go to the movies, but you're going to still stay sick. Now, do you agree to that? Yeah. Well, all right.
Well, you know, actually, I guess I have the best of both worlds because I was trained in terms of nursing, but I've also done a lot of training in terms of what they call alternative health. I call it traditional. And what I see missing from so-called allopathic is spirit, is the really the emphasis on self-determination and self-healing. And we sort of strip that from folks because what happens is people go to the doctor or the hospital, and even though the doctor or nurse or whoever asked them what's wrong, the people rely on something outside of themselves to tell them, one, what's wrong and what they can do about it, when actually it should be the other way around. We're taught, although it's not practiced, we're taught that we're an assistant on the patient's team or the client's team or the person's team, which means that the person is really supposed to be in charge of their own health. And we give a lot of verbiage to it, but we don't do practice that rewards that. If we did practice that rewards that, your insurance would pay for stress management. It would pay for nutritional counseling. It would pay for massages. It would pay for those things the same way they pay for in hospital, but they don't. You know what I mean? They do pay
wow.
for a massage if you're in a automobile collision, but just in terms of maintenance and our normal health, it doesn't look at it from that end. So so not only did I have the professional piece, I also had the personal piece in that I had two near-death situations in terms of emergency surgeries, and I was on a life respirator, and what that made me do was to go closer within, to look at my source and to realize that we actually have everything that we need. We were given when we were born, but we've forgotten our connection. We've forgotten some of the things that we need to do to stay well. Something simple as drinking clean water. You know that a lot of folks mm-hmm. have an aversion to water.
Yeah, yeah.
Something simple as talking to a loved one as opposed to shouting. Something simple as, you know, not being caught up in jealousy and envy. A lot of things that we do, we actually do to ourselves because of whether it's training, madness, some of the toxins we take in from the food and air, some of those things cause us not to walk the path of being well. So, again, that led, actually I have 4 books out. So I started this one, Emancipate Your Spirit, A Conscious Guidebook to Affirmations, Meditation, Liberty, and Other Soulful Reflections. I actually started that before I did the other 3. However, I kept putting it down, and life happened. And then Spirit just wouldn't let me go because I had a lot that I needed to share, which is why I finally finished it.
Okay, I wanted to talk about one of your books, and you just mentioned it, Emancipating Your Spirit, A Conscious Guidebook that deals with positive affirmations, meditation, soulful reflections, and liberty. Uh-huh. Many of us, our lives are soulful. I mean, oh my goodness. And we have so many things that are on our minds, particularly for a lot of people in this the economic climate in the country and around the globe right now. But even to extract that, our lives mm-hmm. are very, very busy, from family to work to people being involved in the community to doing either volunteer work or something that you want to do on the side. Uh-huh. It could be writing a book, but just full. Our lives are so full. How can we carve out time? Because I think most people would do these things if they felt like their life was slowed down. How can we carve out time to meditate? And what is a simple meditation experience like for someone who has never meditated, who's listening to the show? Do we need to sit in a certain position and hum and chat? What is a meditation, a simple meditation experience like? And how do we carve out the time to do this when our lives are so full?
Well, okay. A lot of folks actually have excess time. It's what they do with the excess time and how we perceive our lives. I'll give you a good example. If tomorrow someone told you you had cancer or something that they deemed as a terminal or, a terminal disease state, people generally stop whatever they're doing to concentrate on that. And when it comes to something like meditation or looking at your life, if you are about to lose it, you get another perspective. And most people don't necessarily cherish their own life, because if they did, what they would do is take one moment, say, what am I doing that's actually adding to my health as opposed to subtracting from my health? Because if their conversation is, I'm just too busy to do this or that, what is the this or that? Is it something that will add to your life or subtract from your life? So, you know, once you ask certain questions, you say, okay, you know what, I'm going to make a decision, because that's really where it starts. It starts with a decision to do something that adds to your life. And something simple I tell people, you know, if they're busy and they can't get it together, is instead of getting out of the bed on the left side, get out the bed on the right side. Change your habits. Change your mindset. We do stuff automatically. And it's
Oh, Lord.
It's really difficult.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Really?
It is.
You
are so right. I tell you, how many people, even listening to the show, when you leave your house in the morning and you go anywhere, and you have to leave either if you live in an apartment development or your home, that you either back out or pull in and park the same spot, the same way every day. You do it without thinking. And if you had to go a different way, you just automatically you don't even realize the stuff we do.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
So it's
like, you know, the saying, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. So if you're a person who says, well, I'm too busy, what I generally tell those people is, you know, when you sit on the toilet, you really don't sit on there and say, oh, I don't have time. You know, you take time to do the things that add to your life, right? Right? Matter of fact, some people say that's where they do most of their thinking.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's a great example. Yeah.
Right. So, and I tell folks that most people, when they're going to work, they don't think, oh, let me just throw my clothes on and run out the door. They stop, they wash, you know, they might brush their teeth. They do things that they feel are acceptable to society and things that they feel are part of their routine. So what I tell people is that in order for you to add something, you have to break your routine. You have to do something slightly different that makes you say, oh, wait a minute, because you have to come into a realization. Because our challenge is, no matter what we're doing, if it's life-enhancing, the challenge that we as Nubian or black folks have is consistency. You know, so even if we talk about, which we will in a minute, talk about things that we can do in terms of meditation, we say, I used to do that. I tried to do that. We're not consistent in health-keeping measures. You know, so something as simple as if you're on the bus, or let's say you're at in your car going to work. Well, you know, you have to stop the stoplight or stop sign.
Right.
In that moment, you say, you know, the next light, I'm just going to take a breath. Most people think they're breathing. At the next light, I'm going to take a breath. And you just inhale, putting your hand on your abdomen for a minute, inhale, pushing your abdomen out. And you just take three quick breaths. And that, just those three quick breaths, just allows you to relax a little bit more. And if you do it two lights or three lights, you can be surprised by the time you get to where you're going. That's a real quick thing. Another thing is that when you come home and, you know, you're like, oh, Lord, I'm so tired, you kick your shoes off, and you sit down for a minute, just 1 minute. And if for that minute you sit down and you close your eyes and you put your hand on your chest, you can feel your heart beating.
Wow.
If you close your eyes and feel your heart beating, sometimes it's beating real fast, you want to sit until you can just feel at ease. And because you're tired, you're generally more likely to do that than not. So there are times that actually add to us being able to get into the habit. Do you understand what I'm saying? That we can incorporate it. Just like I used to teach, I do teach childbirth education, and I talk about after women have babies, how they can get exercise in. You can get exercise in the way you pick up your baby. You can get exercise in taking the baby for a walk in the stroller. You can incorporate your life-giving aspects in your life, as opposed to I have to carve out time for it. No, it's part of your life.
Okay. little ways. The same way
little
we pick
ways.
Up bad habits. Little by little. Most things don't happen in a big, huge.
Like you said,
how you eat an elephant, it happens. Won't either what
one
it's going to help us or not. Little by little,
right.
we go on in one direction or another in different areas in our life. Can you tell us how Emancipating Your Spirit is laid out? Is this a book where you present some information to the reader, and then they have to do exercises in the book? How is the book laid out? And can you tell us some, like, do you put examples in there? Are there interviews with other people in the book so our listeners know more about it so they can go out and get a copy of Emancipating Your Spirit?
Okay. You're pretty much on the money. the book that I wrote before this, which is Holistic Guide to Health and Wellness, that has stories in it that people see how they can move to a simple life. When I did Emancipate Your Spirit, which was my next book, I did it as a workbook. So it's 8.5 by 11, and you can actually pick up the book and go to any part of the book to start. You don't have to start at the beginning. You can actually start in the middle because it has different sections. It has affirmations at the beginning, which allow you. I have some folks who pick an affirmation a day and work with that. It has information on how to do meditation, and actually I do a soulful meditation course where I teach about 7 different types of meditation. So it
now how
sort
would
of
somebody get that? How would somebody get that course? Is that online? How would they get that?
They can actually go to my website. I generally have a calendar of events or classes that I'm doing, and we are planning a webinar where we're going to be doing soulful meditation in December.
What's your website?
The website is Be Well Relaxed, BeWellRelaxed.com,
Be Well Relaxed. Be Well Relax. Seminars, webinar coming up for Off the Shelf Listeners is something you can do from the comfort of your home over the internet. So it's convenient, and you don't even have to get in your car and drive anywhere. So that's a good thing.
Right.
And then I wanted to ask you, this is something that it took me a while to learn this. Actually, I got little nudges of this, I think, from the Spirit when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And came to more of a fuller understanding as I got older. A lot of times things happen to us in our lives, whether we're children or adults, and it's not something that we wanted. We didn't want consciously anyway. But how much of a part or a role would you say that we, each individual, plays in our everyday life experiences? Are things just happening to us and we have to respond to them in a certain way? Are we actually helping to cause the events that happen to us in our lives?
Well, actually, that's a threefold answer. One is that nothing happens to us that doesn't come through us. That's the first thing, that we have a connection to the greater universe, and sometimes what we think, what we say, the folks we interact with set things up, and then down the line when it happens, we go, oh, where did that come from? And actually, we sort of set that up. The other is that we actually are, you know, we hear a lot of people talking about our ancestors, and we actually are connected through DNA and our ancestors. And a lot of things that happen in our life are things that are unresolved in past lives or unresolved in relationship to our ancestors. Let's to give an example, let's say your grandmother, your great-grandmother was a sharecropper person, and she saved all of her money, but then she was robbed. You might in this lifetime be someone who just can't control money, you know, who just doesn't have an appreciation of money. Or it could be the opposite. You might be someone who holds on to money and won't spend it for what you need to spend it for. That's not necessarily something that you're causing. It's something that's passed on to you and you're not even aware of it. That's why we need to take stock in the different things that we're doing, and are we getting what it is that we want to get when we're doing these things. However, a lot of it has to do with what we think and what we say. Like I have in the book a piece that talks about self-love and self-talk, and it deals with the things that we say about ourselves. You'll find that people say more negative things about themselves than they do positive things. That's where affirmations are important. And we have a disconnect because we think we have to do everything by ourselves, and actually no one is on the planet by themselves. But a lot of the televised vision and media talks about being individuals and doing things for yourself, by yourself, and that really isn't the way things happen. So a lot of that is trained from outside yourself, some of the things that we adopt. It's like, you know, it's like a computer. You know that if you upload a virus, the computer won't work right.
Right, yes.
So if you are around negative people, people who you know aren't doing what you would like to do, but you hang around them all the time, it could be your family. You hang around them all the time, you begin little by little to squash your own
take
brain.
Take one, right.
You know what I mean? And or if you're someone who had a negative relationship or... And most of the times we understand what's going on when it's happening, but we deny it. In other words, if we see that someone's not treating us the way we want to be treated, we first blame ourselves, then we go into denial. We actually go through the five steps of dying. You know, that our relationship is like life, and when it's not doing what you want it to do, it's like a death of something, a death of part of you, and some of us don't get through it. You know, when I say don't get through it, we take the same experience and repeat it over and over again.
Yes.
And then we look at everybody else and blame everyone else. But everybody who comes into our life, just everybody who comes into our life, is bringing a lesson for us. We're supposed to be bringing a lesson for them, and they're bringing a lesson for us. Now, if we don't take time to learn the lesson or not even aware that it is a lesson, we keep
repeating
that same situation. Right. Right. So things aren't just... random, you know, like even if a child is shot today, which is very tragic, and we say, oh, that's terrible, and they got shot in their life, But I'll give you a good example. There was a little girl who was playing in the basketball court, and there was a gang shooting, and the little girl was shot. Well, she was actually the third person that was shot in the playground. But when she died, the whole neighborhood came together. So the incidents before that, with the boy that was shot, it helped his brother to not do what he was doing. So that was on an individual level. But when the little girl got shot, the neighbors came together. People came out of their homes and started to act human being to human being. Because prior to that, they acted as if they weren't part of society. What I mean by not part of society is if you're not looking out for your neighbor or people around you, then you're acting as if you're not part of society.
So
even though something is tragic and really hurts, the pain is deep. The pain we actually feel is the pain of, for ourselves and not necessarily that person. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the little girl is gone, and instead of focusing on the purpose of her life, the joy of her life, we focus on the pain we're feeling and the anger we're feeling and not, well, obviously there was something, there was a message, there was something we were supposed to learn, because everybody we come in contact with and the incidents we experience are teaching moments.
I think to understand that fully, we have to, there's a book, A Course in Miracles, that is some listeners might find helpful, but you have to start to see yourself as more than a body. Like I always said, if a body, if the body has power, then God would have one. You have to start to see yourself more as a spiritual, energetic being. That's, you know, because God doesn't have a body, a lot of people don't believe God exists.
We are
the body. If the body had power, God would have one. So you have to start to see yourself. Then when you look at the example you just gave of the little girl going away, she's not like dead because she's a spiritual being. Her body's just gone. And then when you see that because she went away, she brought a whole community together. You see how what a gift her physical experience then was.
Yes.
Of course, nobody should get shot. I mean, we're not sitting there saying that. Nobody should be shooting anybody. But but that is still her. She came and gave and brought a gift. That's it. I want to ask a question, but I don't want you to answer it now for our listeners. How can we get about the business of creating the lives that we want to live? I just want you to hold that in your mind, if you don't mind. Then I want to ask you what benefits readers will gain from reading Emancipating Your Spirit, and then I want to talk about We Surrender.
Okay.
What benefits will readers gain from reading Emancipating? If you had to give them a bullet point or key benefits they would walk away with, what would you tell them? This is what you're going to walk away with after you read Emancipating Your Spirit.
One of the first things you, the first thing, the fact that they pick up the book, means that they're willing to do some work for themselves. That's the first thing. The second thing is that as they go through it, they begin to question what are the things that they're doing that enhance their life, what are the things they're doing that don't take them where they need to go. And that's happening more and more. And the third thing is it actually does help to emancipate your spirit, is that if we acted more spirit to spirit, we wouldn't have so many challenges in relationship to communicating. Because a lot of us communicate. I'll give you a good example. I counseled a husband and wife, and the husband adored the wife, and she loved her husband, but she was frustrated because he brought her a beautiful house, he brought a beautiful car, he brought her flowers, you know, he would bring her a lot of different things, and she was still frustrated. He was frustrated because she would tell him that he didn't love her, and he would say, she doesn't seem to appreciate me, and really what you had was communications. All she really wanted was for him to say, I love you, and what he was doing was showing her that he loved her. You know,
I've heard that before. I've heard people say that.
Yes.
and they're both frustrated.
I'm a neurolinguistic psychotherapist, and we communicate. Mm-hmm. We all communicate having the same tools, but some of us, our combination is different. Some of us are kinesthetic. We have to feel it. Some of us have to see it. Some of us have to hear it first. You know, we do all of them, but we might have a combination where one has to come before the other. So in that case, mm-hmm. he was a visual person. He had to show her. She was an auditory person. She had to hear it. Once they understood what was going on, their frustration died. So what the book does, it allows you to do some critical thinking because it asks questions. It provides some exercises for you to do by yourself, with a group, with your family, and you would just be so surprised that you can be in the house with folks and they think entirely different than you, and you wonder why you get into little schisms and conflicts.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So it does a really good job, and not because I'm the author, but because people tell me it does a real good job in terms of identifying how you can move forward in your own life.
Wow. So. You know, I have heard people say that and the man is probably frustrated thinking, how much more do I have to do for you? And the woman is thinking, how come you keep trying to buy my love? How come you can't just say you love me? You must not really love me. And that, could you imagine? Oh, my goodness. Emancipating your spirit, emancipating your relationship. Let me get you out of this web. What was the experience like of publishing Emancipating Your Spirit? What a blessed book. What was the experience of putting this together like for you? I always think as an author, creating a book changes the mm-hmm. author in some way as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, even though this is my fourth book, this is what I consider like my baby. I mean, I had different experiences with each book, but this one, mm-hmm. because I started on it before I did the other one, and I put it down, took it up, put it down. What happened with this one is I actually finished it in 2006, and I had it reviewed, and people loved it, and I put it down and wrote two more. One of the reasons I put it down was I had a lot of color pictures inside of the book. I mean, just probably about 40-some color pictures, which made it very difficult to try and get that out there. I put it down and did some other things. And Spirit kept calling to me. It's like, you know, I kept hearing people having challenges that I was addressing in my book. And I said, you know what? You need to get that out. So I had to take my author hat on and put my publisher hat on, and I just changed some of the pictures. And from the time that I finished the initial book to when I actually published it, we had the election of Obama.
Okay.
And so I had to update the book. So it went from 158 pages to 232 pages.
Wow.
And I added more critical thinking in the book and added more examples. You know, like it's one thing to talk about theory. It's another thing to do, to have examples to show you what
you're
talking about.
Just
so
like the examples you've given today on the show, it helps to clarify and make it more clear to the reader. I want to ask you next about resurrender before I go back to a previous question that I asked you. Resurrender, is this your first published book, the Resurrender? Is that the first one, the book that you came out with?
One.
And it's a book of poetry and songs, is that correct?
Book of poetry and lyrical verse, yes.
Do you perform any of those books, any other poems and songs?
Yes. My daughter and I, it's a good, interesting story in that I, you know, have been doing stress management workshops and relationship workshops for years, and I was asked to go on a retreat. It was a Vision Quest retreat, and we had about 60 people, and I did a workshop, and the workshop, they were supposed to take the different papers of challenges they had to the top of the mountain and burn them, and I was one of the oldest people on the retreat, and I walked up the mountain with them. We went to Dolly Sod in West Virginia. Anyway, I got to the top of the mountain, and when I looked down, it's like, oh, my goodness, how am I going to get down the mountain? And I saw the younger people rolling down the hill, so rolling down the mountain. So I lay down on the mountain and rolled down myself. I rolled in a ditch, out of a ditch, and rolled three-quarters of the way. Yes, three-quarters of the way down without trying to stop. Some of the other people hit their heads on rocks and, you know, just had little challenges. And I'm just rolling. When I got home, 2 weeks later, I had rode about 38 points. While that was happening, my daughter was in Hampton University doing her master's, and she was away from home for the first time pretty much. And she was writing poetry too. So when she came home on a break, we were comparing notes, and we had some of the same kinds of poems. And, we put that together, and because I had surrendered, both of us had surrendered. She surrendered to being away from home and learning and taking in new information. I surrendered in terms of hearing answering the universal call to put out the information that I had learned. So we published that in 2003, and then we went around the country and did spoken word, mother and daughter. And to my knowledge, we're the only mother and daughter who've published a book together and did spoken word. And it was a lot of fun. It was just, oh, my goodness. And most of the interviews we had, people would ask my daughter, well, what's it like working with your mother?
Working with your mother.
Yeah. And she would say, well, she's my mother. You know what I mean? We have a really harmonious relationship. So that was a spiritually uplifting experience. It was, you couldn't have told me 10 years ago or 20 years ago that I would actually be writing books. You know, I have done more on the clinical side. I've also done more on the technical side in terms of doing brochures and business cards and letterheads and desktop publishing for folks. But in terms of actually publishing my books and then helping other people to publish theirs, was a new experience.
Wow. And grateful that you heeded to the call. Again, before I ask the question that I asked previously before you answer that, positive affirmations, I was looking back through my research, and for some reason something jumped out and like asked this question. Why do they work? What happens to the human brain? What makes positive affirmations work? Why do they work?
Affirmations work because we, as you said earlier, we're not our physical body, we're spirit. And we speak into reality what it is that we want. We make reality. However, because we think we're powerless, we don't realize the power of spoken word. And when we say positive things, because affirmations are said in the present and are positive, when we say those things, we actually reprogram ourselves. And the more we say positive things, the more we begin to radiate what it is we're saying. So affirmations allow you to, matter of fact, the Bible and the Quran and the Holy Scriptures all talk about affirm, praise, and magnify. When you affirm something, you say it in the positive. And when you praise it, you add to it, you acknowledge yourself and your connection. And when you magnify it, it's whatever it is you're talking about, you magnify. So that's why I talk about, instead of talking about violence, we need to talk about more about love. Instead of talking about taxes and deficits, we need to talk about more self-determination. We need to talk about what it is we actually want as opposed to what we don't have. So affirmations work in that they help to reprogram our subconscious, and they help to let the universe and all the energy around us know that we're working on affirming our lives.
You know what, and I appreciate you sharing that and everything that you've shared thus far on the show. We actually have blown through more than half of the show just as quickly.
Oh, my goodness.
But one thing I wanted to say, when people think about positive affirmations, and if you study how the mind works, it's so important that when you raise your children that you're depositing things in them. They're gonna, so they know that they're empowered and that they can go out and create the lives that they want. And also, when you meet people on a day-to-day basis, even when you're frustrated, that you say things to them that can, it can actually either help liberate them or be something that'll just start to go down into the system and do their work. Psychologists, that's what they do. You can start to give people good energy, speak things to them, and they'll go down and pull those weeds out so that they can, and then the person themselves, you'll start to see them evolve and become who they truly, truly were created to be.
Yes.
Each of us has a role in that. With everybody that we meet, each of us has a role in that. When you think about positive affirmations, we can all give each other those by saying loving things to each other. Now I wanted to go back and ask you the question I'd asked you earlier before I go on and talk about your other book, Hair Pieces. And I want to let our off-the-shelf guests know who might have just tuned in. If you're just itching to hear the rest of the show, if you just tuned in the beginning of the show, after streams, you can, of course, as always, go back and listen to this interview with Mama Akusua as many times as you would like. And just to give you some background on her, if you are just tuning in, she is the author of several books, including Emancipating Your Spirit, which we have talked about earlier, Hair Pieces, which we're going to talk about, and We Surrender. And there's a fourth book. What did you say the fourth book that you wrote was?
It's a guide to health, to holistic health and wellness, how to live a peaceful, loving, and simple life.
Okay, and she is an RN, a registered nurse. She has worked in the medical field for several years. She's also a radio talk show host and an organizing supporter of the Kumba Festival. So we are so happy to have her with us here today. I'd asked you earlier, and I paused on this because this is a question that I know a lot of people want to know the answer to. And deep within us, I think we all do know the answer already. But how can we get about the business? And I've heard a lot of people say, I just actually saw this morning.
Uh-huh.
The book, The Secret, somebody said that's a bunch of bogus. A lot of people don't believe that we can create our own lives. They think things are happening to us. They're out of our control. All we can do is deal with it with a positive attitude. How can we go about the business of creating the lives that we want? And I'm speaking about people who have been trying to do something for many years, and they have not had success at it, and they think they may think that what we're talking about is just a bunch of bogus. They're like, I've done that positive affirmation stuff. I've done that meditation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a deep body massage. I've read the scriptures. I go to church, and I still don't have what I want. They just think this is a bunch of bogus. How do we go about creating the lives that we truly want to experience?
Okay. First of all, we have to say that that's what we want. That whatever it is that we want to do or achieve, we have to actually say it. Say it, write it, whatever. I tell people, you know, that if you're not getting the success you want, it means that you're not feeding yourself the success you want. So I tell people to write it on a card. Whatever it is that you want to accomplish, write it on a card, whether it's three things, one thing, but to write them down on a card so you can see them, whether it's in the bathroom, the kitchen, whatever, in your pocketbook, so that you can remind yourself, because we're very easily distracted. So even if people say, oh, I used to do affirmations, I used to do, the key word is I used to.
Mm-hmm.
You're alive. So as long as you're alive, you have to keep doing whatever it is that's going to help you to get what you need. If you say, it's like we're on a trip. You know, sometimes we go places and we're not sure how to get there, and we get frustrated two streets away from where our destination is. We turn around, or we don't have a GPS, or we stop in the gas station and we look for a map because we're trying to get to a particular destination. Some people turn around just before they get there. So what I tell people is to first you need to believe that you deserve a happy life. You deserve whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. You have to deep within believe that you deserve it. If you believe that you deserve it, you become a pit bull. You hold on to it for dear life. And what generally happens is we don't really believe that we deserve to be happy and healthy or wealthy. We don't really believe that. We think that's for someone else. So therefore, we'll stop before we get to our destination. So we have to be very consistent, self-determined, and strong in our belief that we deserve it. So that's what I would say. I would say consistency, that I don't care if, you know, I did the affirmations and the man still left me. Well, probably wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. I don't care if you said I did meditation and I still have a bad hip. Well, let's look at some of the other things that you're doing. You know, that when we actually sit down and evaluate what we're doing to our lives or what we're doing with our lives, we find out there are a lot of things that we could change that would benefit us. Or there might be just one or two things that get in the way of where we need to go. So I'm a big one for telling people to seek out those that, like, let's say you see someone who sort of has the kind of life that you would like to have, or they have the kind of energy you'd like to have. Find out, well, what are you reading? What are you eating? What are you doing to get to where you are? Like, you know, everyone learns from someone else. So if you're around people, because that's the other thing, we're not around folks who are doing or saying the things that we want to say. So you need to find that and do an example. Like, in terms of teaching, everyone has a guide. You know, we sort of give credit to folks who aren't really living the kind of lives we would like to have. You know, so if it's someone who, you know, you see and they're always happy and smiling, whatever, you say, you know, what is it that you're reading?
Yes.
Or what is it that you're doing? Because I noticed that you're pretty happy. There's nothing wrong in that. And if the person is really a spiritually centered person, they'll be glad to give you that information.
Yes.
'Cause I know people ask me all the time. They want to know, well, what are you drinking or eating? Is something you drink? Because you're always happy. It's like, I'm not always happy, but I'm, let's say, 95% of the time.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, so I'm still learning.
Because you know what's going on. You know what's going on when you're not. You have a lot of tools.
Yes.
So you know how you get, if you, like you say, you're looking at life like driving a car, you know how, I feel like I've gotten off track. You know how to get back on track.
Yeah.
And some of us don't know, and we'll just keep veering off. And as soon, and I'm told that we all have an emotional guidance system. It works like a GPS. When you, I don't care. Something might make somebody else happy and joyous that makes you feel miserable. There's a reason for that. They're going to end up either in a different spot than you are, and they're supposed to be there. Following other people is not the way to live your life. When something doesn't feel right, it means you have gotten off the wrong road, and you've got to stop. There's a verse of scripture that says, be still and realize that I'm God. Stop and check in with God and get back on. You can't, so often we don't, I'm told the worst thing a human can do is to do something you really don't want to do.
We
force ourselves to do things. We force ourselves to stay in relationships that we're miserable in. Somehow we think there's some reward.
Like,
I'm told that's the worst thing. The worst thing that a human can do, because you're getting further and further and further away from your life path the longer you do that. So many things that you have shared today as we come down to like the last 10 minutes. Definitely got to have you back on again, because there was so many more things that I wanted to cover. But I wanted to, when you said being consistent, when I was raising my son, my father said that it's so important to be consistent with children. It might seem like it's not taking, it's not working, but if you're consistent, when that child is grown, you will look and go, oh, my goodness, because a lot of us aren't even consistent when we raise our children, and then when they're grown, you can look and see that's, you know, so that reward. I can say as a writer, I can tell you that not only being consistent, but also when events happen, and you mentioned when that guy leaves, when events happen that we might not want to have happen, like a layoff or something, it could be an opportunity for you to launch forward. And many of us don't see it that way. We see it as a huge loss and setback, and we don't go forward. I think that's one of the key things that stops us from walking into, I got to tell you, things that happen and we just say, oh, my God, this was just a setback. It wasn't.
There's an opportunity. That's right. And you use the best word, opportunity. It's an opportunity for you to grow. It's an opportunity for you to go in a direction of where you really need to be. Because a lot of times we have people taking up space and taking up a place that keeps us from growing. And sometimes we need we need divine help to get us out of that rut.
Yes.
To stop
and
being
it will it will at first seem painful and just it can we can just hate it and kick it and kick against it and kick it against it. Just start we have to start to learn to be still, and not everything that looks horrible is horrible. Not everything that looks wonderful is wonderful either. Another book that you authored is titled Hair Pieces. It's an anthology. Did you compile works with other writers? Tell us about Hair Pieces. Tell us what this book is comprised of.
Hair Pieces is actually a commemorative publication that my husband and I edited. We actually have pieces in it. What we did is I mentioned earlier that I'm part of the Kumba Family Organizing Committee that puts on the annual International Locks Conference, Natural Hair, Holistic Health, and Beauty Expo, which actually happens next weekend. It's been going on for 16 years. And
Where is the location for the event?
Oh, it's going to be at the Walter D. Palmer Charter School, which is at 910 North 6th Street here in Philadelphia. It's going to be from 11 to 8:30.
Okay. Next weekend.
And it's only $5 for the whole day. But anyway.
Wow.
The book, we wanted something to document the 10 years that we had been doing the conference, because it was really a labor of love, and it's grown from one day to 2 days, grown from 50 people to over 3,000 people, and people from all over the world coming to Philadelphia. Anyway, what we did was we put a call out to poets, storytellers, people who had experiences with our hair. And as Nubian folks, we've had some experiences in relationship to our hair and understanding. So Hair Pieces, the anthology, we wound up with 38 submissions. We picked 28 of them, and we have poems, short stories, prose, interviews, and artwork and pictures, all sort of commemorating and celebrating the fact that we put together the conference, which celebrates our divine selves, our health, our beauty, our natural hair.
Okay, Hair Pieces, yes, and that's something in our culture. I love black folks' hair. I don't know why we don't love our own hair. You can do so many things with it. You can do so many things with our hair. I tell you, I think our hair is, you can do more with our hair, I think, than a lot of other textures of hair. I know a lot of people don't see it that way. You can do a ton of things with an African texture of hair. So many more things with our texture of hair. I thank you so, so much. I wanted to ask you before we do close, we're coming down to the last 7 minutes. How can our listeners hear it off the shelf? Because many of them are writers and many of them are seeking, you know, things that we discussed today, ways to liberate and emancipate our own spirits, and also ways to get their own businesses going. I mean, you work with the Kumba Festival, you write articles, you're an entrepreneur, you've published books. What would you say to writers who are looking for ways to become a published author? And then second, how can they get the word out about their book so that, you know, they can start to get some readers and buyers for their work?
Well, let's do the last question first. One of the ways that you can actually get the word out about your book is before you actually even finish the book, you start talking about it. You do you develop a coalition of people who will support you in terms of what it is you're writing. That people like to talk about things that they're involved in. And even though you may be the author, word of mouth is very strong. But other resources happen when you tell people what it is you want to do. When you say, you know, I'm about to write a book that deals with X, Y, and Z, whatever that is, whether it's a personal experience or self-help or whatever that is, when you develop a coalition or develop people who want to support your effort, they bring a whole set of resources that you wouldn't necessarily know about. They also bring people who would be interested in what it is you're doing. That's before you even finish writing the book. So that by the time you finish writing the book, there's a buzz with have people waiting for what you've written.
Mm.
Generally what happens is we go through the process of writing, and then once we write it, we say, okay, here it is, come get it.
Right.
But we
right.
have to just establish the buzz before we actually finish writing the book.
Mm.
And then in terms of writing the book, know that writing books is not where you make money. That's the first thing. You don't make money from writing books. Books are actually neon calling cards for whatever else you're doing, whether it's speaking, doing workshops, making something, whatever else you're doing, it actually draws attention to that, because then you are adding to what people are looking at when they're looking at your book. So there's some strategies to being successful in getting the book out there in the public. There's some strategies doing little workshops around different parts of your book or the experience of writing the book, because there are a lot of people who want that information. So finding out exactly what your audience is, what it is that you're focusing on before you actually go through that process helps you a lot. Or let's say you've already been through the process and you have the book. Actually sitting down and reading it to yourself again to find out, well, what was it I'm actually saying and who would benefit from it? And don't be afraid to talk about it. We have a lot of folks who have a book, and they don't let anybody know that they have one.
Right.
You could have the
right.
best product in the world, but
yeah.
if you don't let folks know you have it. Like, you should have a
right.
website. You should, if you belong to a church or mosque or whatever, let people know that you're available to talk about it. I had a number of my family and friends around the country say, okay, look, get your friends together because I'm coming and we're doing a, not a book signing, a book reading. Book readings actually turn into book signings. But when
right.
you say book signings to people, they automatically think, oh, I got to go buy a book. When you
yeah.
say a book reading and discussion and you start talking about whatever it is that's in your book, not the whole book, but whatever is in your book, you stimulate interest, which makes people want to buy it. So it's
mm-hmm.
little strategies
mm-hmm.
that allow you to move forward and help you to get your book out there in the public and sold. You know, so it's more than one thing.
You are definitely an entrepreneur as well. I tell you, this has been, I've got to have you back on. I've got to look at our calendar. I'll reach back out to you because I didn't even get through half of the questions that I had through the research to ask you today. But I'm glad that we got to cover each of your books. I want to let our listeners here at Off the Shelf know that Mama Akusua is going to be at the Kumba Festival in Philadelphia, and that is next weekend, only $5 to attend.
Uh-huh.
You can check that out and more information on her at Be Well Relax, which is spelled BeWellRelax.com. BeWellRelax.com. Easy to remember. Again, BeWellRelax.com. You can get information. Go over and check out the Kumba Festival in Philadelphia next weekend. And you can also check out Mama Akusua's books, Emancipating Your Spirit, Hair Pieces, We Surrender, and another book that she wrote on holistic health. You can tell from listening to her, she's a registered nurse, a health practitioner, a spiritual counselor, that she does know what she's talking about and has experience with examples that she gave and an understanding for what she is talking about. We so thank her for being here with us this morning on Off the Shelf. And we encourage you all to come back again, Off the Shelf every Saturday at 11 a.m. We're so grateful to have each of our listeners here. Remember some of the applications and advice that Mama Akusua shared today. If it resonates with your spirit, perhaps it is something that you would want to look even further into. Again, I say, if it resonates with your spirit, because timing is also of essence as we go through this life journey. I thank each of you for being here with us. Please go out and get Mama Akusua's books. Visit her online, BeWellRelax.com, and get Emancipating Your Spirit, Hair Pieces, We Surrender, and a book on holistic health. And pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at my website, www.chistell.com. Remember that you are so incredibly valued, so truly blessed, and so loved. I'll see you again next Saturday at 11 o'clock.
in the morning, where we continue to bring you authors and editors and publishers and entrepreneurs and other movers and shakers and the book publishing industry. Bye for now. Remember, you're so, so, so valued and so blessed. And Mama Kusa, I'll shoot you an email. Thank you so much.
Peace.